Om Shanti. Good morning and welcome to the session. So this morning we have a lovely treat, which is a conversation between two of our dear, respected, senior Western brothers. So we have Brother Eric, and he's from New York. He came into Gyan in early 80s, in the beginning of service in USA, and has been involved in service there since then. He helps Sister Mohini with some of the administration for not only America but the region. And yeah, he's a great person. And he has an engineering background. But you'll find out, I don't need to say. And Brother Neville came into Gyan in 1981 in the UK, and he has a journalism and writing background. He has written several books for Baba and been involved in service in the UK, in Oxford, in Worthing, and both of them are trusted members of the RC Trustee Group who help to manage many things for the Yagya. So their conversation today, which we will be able to listen in on, is about revealing your true self. So we may hear about how that has happened for them, how it is happening, what it's like, and if there's time, we may, through question-answer, be able to join in that conversation. So over to you, brothers.
Thank you, Chris. And thanks for this opportunity to come and meet you. We've been friends and associates for a very long time. And so, yes, we thought we would just have a chat and you could listen in on it, and we'll see what comes out. I suppose perhaps on this topic of revealing our true self, something I'd like to start with, Eric, is if you could just kind of give us an indication of is there a difference between revealing the true self and revealing the truth about what we've become? You know, there's like two things there. And how have you managed to live with both of those? Because you've had a central role in service in the States from very early on, but you must have evolved more and more towards living the truth. But on the route, there are other things that get in the way, like old sanskars and all of that. How have you managed to live with both worlds?
Great question. Not sure how I'm going to respond to that. But in that sense of living in both worlds, we'd want to take a step back. In the understanding of knowing our true self, or revealing our true self, and I guess the first thing would be to know ourself, and that would have been part of the process, and the idea that we can't reveal the truth until we know the truth, and so knowledge is a big part of this process. And that sense that, you know, what we teach here and what you've all gone through is somehow there was a light bulb that went on, a click, typically. Some of you, it's instantaneous, or a recognition. Sometimes it might be a little dimmer and such like that. And I'm going to interrupt myself and ask if there is a translation problem to raise your hand and such like that. Because if we get carried away or talk, and need to slow down. We'd appreciate your guidance on that. But the first thing would be to have that understanding of our spiritual self. And was able to think about the topic a bit, because that awareness, knowing the self, is the first step for me. And it was that process of, I am the soul, not the body, because I was taught the other way around. That I had this soul that I had to take care of, and it was going to go on and leave me when I die. And so that flip was an instant understanding of the knowledge of the self, And so to reveal the self, needed to know the self. And then wanted to interject that knowing that was just the beginning. And it was powerful. It changed my life. But I had two opportunities that come to mind. One was in California, one was here. And that was through Drishti. And knowing who I was is a lot different than experiencing myself as I am. And I knew I was a soul. I understood that. But when I met Dottie Junkie for the first time in California, she, after Amrit Vela, there were a few of us around. We turned around. She gave us Drishti. That's the first time I had the understanding of what it meant to feel and experience that knowledge. And then at the time in the 80s when I came, had a chance to sit in front of Bap Dada, and that was also a reinforcement of the experience of the knowledge. And so it's not that we can just say, I know something and now I'm going to tell you, but for me it's been a process of knowing something and then experiencing that truth. And then for me the next step was to understand and kind of reveal myself to myself and actually acknowledge that I have understood who I am and I have kind of seen what is possible, but I didn't live in that. And therefore there were things that were keeping me between where I am and where I am going and will get to. And so that process, that's the world that most of us are living in now. Knowing something and having a direction for it, but at the same time not being where we will want to be, and in that sense, that will be kind of a revelatory experience. Did that get anywhere close to your question?
Yes, definitely. And I would say the gap was even bigger for me, because I was quite a strong materialist in my outlook. I was working as a science correspondent. I'd bought into the idea that science was our best hope for the future. Okay. I had a deep distaste for religion, because for what I'd seen of it, I didn't realize how it can be such a support. But for what I'd seen of it, I had this distaste. And so I had this very materialistic outlook, and yet suddenly, partly thanks to the drama, really, because I, living with that materialistic outlook, not knowing the true self, trying to define the self through externals, very ego-driven life, all of a sudden there was an ego collapse. I would say it was in my late 30s, and that collapse of the ego, where suddenly the soul was perceiving that the journey it was on wasn't working. Everything I'd fought so hard for in career, in family, there was something profoundly missing. And that ego collapse temporarily allowed me extraordinary experience of bliss.
Really?
Yeah,
the collapse
the ego disappeared.
Okay.
For a little while.
Yeah.
And there was this fantastic experience of unbelievable bliss. So I really experienced the truth about myself.
Okay, so you identify the loss of ego and the experience that came from that. You are seeing that as your truth.
Very much so. But it was, and hence my question about experiencing that truth, but then needing to know more about the truth about the self, which is where, you've actually developed a stone intellect, as Daddy Janky would quite often tell me. And, that the outlook, the programming, the conditioning in my head was so materialistic that there was this big gap between this revelation of the bliss that human life can be all about, the love and the joy and the peace, and yet, I would find myself with, as the journey progressed, with having to cope with the fact that I'd got these layers of body consciousness that were in the way of that. And because when the ego collapses, which it's kind of like a midlife crisis, I suppose. But I was married, I had children, so, and I needed to work, and so I had to reconstruct an ego with which to cope with everyday life. You can't just sort of be in a blissful puddle. You need some structure in your life to live with, and so those sanskars of limitation had to be brought back into my life to some degree. And so the journey has been a long one of gradually learning how to bring the truth of the deep self into my consciousness in an everyday sense.
What I'm hearing is that you had a structure that you called the ego, and at some time that structure collapsed, and you saw bliss, but living in that moment of bliss wasn't going to get you through the day.
Exactly.
And so you somehow had some pieces of past ego around yourself, and you somehow
reassembled
them. Okay. And so are you still working with a partially constructed, rebuilt ego, or have you somehow taken that down too? Or how have you moved from that?
It's been a long journey. And this is why I'm really interested in your example, because it seems to me that from quite early on, you were functioning as a very good BK. You know, you now have this... you're a director of the United States family, and you do multiple roles. And ever since I've known you, you've managed these two pretty well. But maybe my circumstances were a bit different in that I had children, you know. They were halfway through their childhood when I came to Baba, and a wife and a career that I had to go back to. But I left the career for a couple of years, during which I wrote a book, the first book I wrote, which was very therapeutic for me. But then I had to get back into a job because the book didn't make any money. And so then I was back in the newspaper business for many years. Mm-hmm. And I saw immediate transformation in being much less ego-driven, much more with my colleagues, much more positive motivation, but still living with those limited understandings of being in Kali Yuga, without which I probably couldn't have functioned in deep Kali Yuga. So, the journey has been a long one. I would say the biggest challenge in revealing my true self to myself, which is the point that you were making, revealing my true self in a consistent way, not through some blissful temporary experience, but through really knowing that this is who I am. It's been the study, daily study of the Murli. I'm such a fan of the Sakar Murlis, because I haven't missed Sakar Murli, haven't missed the Murli for about 40 years. I was in Gyan a couple of years, kind of not listening every day, but then realized that if I was to stand a chance of making this journey, I needed that transformation in the intellect. And the daily Murli, especially Sakar Murlis, have really brought about that change internally. With that change, then the Dana has started to be more powerful for actually really changing my sanskars as well.
Can you describe the process of the change that you experienced with the Murlis?
It's fundamentally to begin with, the Sakar Murlis hardly made any sense to me at all. I remember Sister Genty very early on gave me a copy of a book called The Imperishable Jewels of Knowledge, which was some little summaries of some Sakar Murlis. And I was on holiday with my family, and I was very intoxicated with what I'd found with the BKs, and I would kind of find some space to sit with this little book, but I couldn't make head or tail of it.
Really?
It just didn't make any sense to me at all. There were so many unfamiliar ideas. But the daily exposure to Bubba's structure of thought, that I am a child of God, I'm an eternal soul, I've been round the cycle, I've picked up these body consciousness in the course of my journey, don't worry about that, it's happened to everybody to different degrees, and now the Father is here to awaken me, and if I listen to the structure of ideas that he's giving me, then I will be able to reveal my true self to myself, and then as I start to live that true self, the beauty of it will radiate to others. Okay. And that's begun to happen actually more recently.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And what was it that
you sound doubtful there? You know, sure.
No, some of them have sunglasses irradiating so much. There was a question to follow up with that. What was it that kept you reading Merleys or booklets that you didn't understand? And why didn't you give up if it didn't make any sense?
Because the experience I was getting was of truth.
So you're getting an experience reading something you didn't understand?
No, the experience was from BKs.
Around you, there were other people.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So it wasn't the knowledge, but there was something else
exactly.
In your environment.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's where, you know, when I would meet BKs, I would be, even ones who might only have been doing this for 2 or 3 years and might disappear after 3 or 4 years, but even they had something that mm-hmm. was a deep memory was returning, that this is the way to live.
Okay.
So that was really clear to me from the beginning, even though I couldn't understand the structure of knowledge.
Yeah. So you didn't know what was going on, but you liked what you were experiencing.
Exactly.
And so trying to figure out the source.
I want that.
Yeah.
That was the motivation. I want that in myself. And that's what kept me going through thick and thin. But lots of ups and downs along the way. But that's why, just to come back to yourself, Eric, you know, the question I was asking was, you had this capacity to hold high office with the BKs in America. What are the challenges of that? As a, you know, look, Eric reminds me of a real all-American male. You know, he's kind of, you could imagine him on the what do you call it, American football, something like that. He would seem like a good sportsman, very straightforward guy, nice, very nice person. But here he is in this Indian movement, you know, started in India. Okay, there are others across the world like ourselves, but, you know, what are the challenges have been for you? Were there any?
Yes.
Can you elucidate?
Sorry
about that word.
So, well,
light.
To set the stage a little, I'm going to take some of you back into a time that you might not be able to imagine. But in the 80s, I had a job. I had gone through a lot of things and was living by myself at that time. And I had a job where I would go and visit people in the field, see their offices and such. And because I would drive, I had time, and so I would listen to the radio. And there was a nice program called New Dimensions, and they had very interesting people on there, bankers and artists, and there was also one of the Brahma Kumaris, Sister Jenti, who was recorded, and I was able to hear that. And something about it struck me that this was a nice feeling. I'm not sure if I remember that there was an energy or something, and I was available for something in my life. And so if you could imagine, the radio would say, this is the address you need to write a letter to for more information. Okay, and this was no websites, no emails, nothing. And so I wrote a letter to the San Francisco Center, which was connected, and then they would have sent something back a month later. And then I looked at some of the information, and I ordered some books, and I sent my little, some money, and so a month later, I would have gotten the correspondence course, because I was in a city, there was no center, and actually there was about 1,000 miles from anything at that time, West Coast, East Coast. And so I took the Raja Yoga introductory course through the mail. And it was quite transformative to be able to think of those things and understand the foundations. And then I got a book from Jagdish Bhai, and these are the rules of what a Raja Yoga should be. And it all made sense to me. Mm. You know, once there was that sense of I am the soul with the body rather than the other way around, then, you know, the tradition I grew up in, God made us in His image. And so if I'm a soul, then, you know, God is a soul. And from the science background, you all know these things, matter is eternal. You can change its shape, but you can't destroy it or create it. And so then the cycle made sense in that process. And then now it's just all fit in. But at that time, if you didn't notice, I'm a brother from the West. And most of the BKs were Indian sisters. And so there was a learning curve about how they should act in my mind and I should act in their mind. And so some stories in some ways. One of my memorable ones is that I was by myself, living alone, had these things, and it was brilliant. I really enjoyed that time because I didn't have to interact with anybody. I was getting knowledge. It made some sense. And then the sister who was in corresponding with me said, well, maybe we could come and visit you. Because the intent was that this is for everybody, and so we had to do some service. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And so then they came, and that sense of reveal, when I heard the topic of this, I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea of the culture or the people I was talking to. There was no conversations. And so they invited themselves, and I said, all right. And then it was a time when you could go to the airplane and meet people as they came off the airplane right at the gates, no security. And I was waiting, and then I saw this woman come and a package. And I thought it was a signboard, you know. And I thought I was going to be meeting someone who said, the end is near, God has come. I thought, oh my God, what did I get myself into? But it wasn't her. It was somebody else. Oh. It's like, oh my, you know, thank God I don't have to. Because I'm kind of, if you know the United States, I'm from the Midwest. We don't promote ourselves too much. And so wearing a signboard in the big city wasn't what I wanted to do. And so I had to really change expectations about what service would be and how we would interact. And things grew. And please don't model this system anymore. But I was the only one living in Chicago. And they said, well, you know, maybe you could open a center. And it's like, well, you know, there's nobody around, nothing to do. And so that process of trying to transfer a cultural bias from India about how the world works and what should be done into a Midwestern American culture was
amazing.
Quite different.
How long had you been studying when you opened the center?
Well, it depends on how you count the time. About 2 years.
Right.
But the first year was mailing the courses back together.
Yeah.
And it was a sense that there was a great opportunity, responsibility to see how, you know, how do we do service? How are you going to reveal this? What are you going to do? And so that was a lot of fun, actually, to try to figure out how to present something that would be foreign into a comfortable way that could be, you know, like feeding a baby a little at a time. Here's something. Try this. I worked with someone who, straight arrow, grounded, you know, this. And I would talk. I talked to him one time about 20 minutes about what I did, just how we think and how we see things and the experience that created that. And I made a mistake. I used the word meditation after about 20 minutes. That stopped the conversation. Nope. That's not what I do. That's evil. That's no good. You can't do that thing. All right. Won't use that word again. So, but the trying to understand and I think there are a lot of people in the world who come to us so that we can practice with them and see how it is that our presentation, our experience, our state of mind can affect other souls. Because there were some souls who came and would give me a sense of what I needed to do better. And so that revelation is revealing what I do and how I do that and what can I do better? How can I change my stage, change my style, change, you know, both the physical and the spiritual and evolve into a place where I think we're supposed to go. Baba talks about this a lot. It is your vibration. It is your face. It is, you know, how you hold yourself that's going to do the real service.
Yeah, there was a wonderful statement recently, become so beautiful that everyone receives the fragrance of this knowledge. That's revealing the self, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Become so beautiful that everyone receives the fragrance of this knowledge. I adore that, and that's like within grasping distance now. But previously it wasn't, because of all the obstacles to that,
yeah.
You know, in terms of old conditioning. But just one thing I'd like to add about that ego structure, because it's pretty clear to me that you weren't so ego-driven when you came to Baba. The ego would be there, but it wasn't that negativity that I was experiencing, I don't think. And a point that I would like to make is that I think we can make the mistake of disregarding the ego, of thinking that because it gets in the way of the bliss, that it's bad, but it isn't. It's actually an ego structure, I think, is needed, but you need to be light about it and to understand that it's not you.
Okay.
It's just like, you know, I'm not the body and I'm not my ego. An ego can be useful in that sense as a structure, like, for example, knowing that I'm in a male body or that I'm a journalist or I'm a grandpa or, you know, these are aspects of things that are okay in life, but wrong to identify with them. And a story that I'd like to tell about Daddy Janki that illustrated this beautifully, very early on actually, forgive me if you've heard me tell this story before, but very powerful one, where I was over to see Daddy, she just used to speak a little English, and I was sitting in an upstairs room at her house, and I'd heard that a bit of a disaster had happened where a sister who was very important in service and very dear to Daddy had taken offense at something that had happened and had left. She'd gone back to her family and she'd been gone about 2 weeks. She was going to come back in time, but Daddy didn't know that. And Daddy was really, you know, there was an element of Daddy that was very upset. And she wouldn't suppress this. You know, she wouldn't suppress her feelings. The feelings were there, but she wouldn't identify with them. It's very interesting. What happened was, part way through our conversation, the phone went. It was Daddy Kamarka, returning a call from Daddy Janki. Daddy Kumarka in India, wanting to speak to Daddy Janki. She came through. And Daddy Janki was telling her the story, clearly, and she was saying, she was like this. She was sharing her feelings. As soon as this went on for about 10 minutes, when the phone call ended, now where were we? You know? She didn't identify with those feelings.
Okay, so she experienced feelings,
exactly.
But she didn't hold on to them and identify with them,
no,
is what you're saying.
And this getting this distinction of not suppressing stuff, but facing it and using it and acknowledging it is such an important lesson. And one that I feel took me a long time to really understand. So that's one of the joys that I have now, that I feel that when I see the limitations in myself, it's okay. You know, they're there still to play a part in my role, but that I'm gradually seeing them fall away as I sort of identify more and more with this goal of radiating the fruits of the knowledge, rather than having to share knowledge as well. You know.
Okay.
That is a wonderful fruit,
yeah,
within this journey. And I just feel that the struggles that I went through when I didn't realize, A, that there was such fruit to be gained, or B, even that I was critical of myself, judgmental towards myself because of the ego, because of the vices. Baba wants us to understand, part of our truth is to know that the vices are there, but he wants us to disidentify from them. And that doesn't mean kind of killing them. Yes, in time, definitely he wants them to go through yoga, which is like a non-violent way of dealing with them, and through the study. He said recently, when you're studying, Maya can't come. That's why I found the study so helpful.
Okay.
Maya comes and blocks remembrance, but Maya can't interfere when you're studying. So whenever I've had some bad patch, I intensify study and it sees me through.
Yeah.
I go back to the Murli.
I think that was a yukti that I've heard that the Dadis used. If there was something, you know, they'd wake up or they would have an issue or whatever, they'd pick up a Murli.
Mm.
And that would make sense in how you've described it. It's when they pick up the Murli, whatever was bringing energy that took them into a different place, that would stop.
Yeah.
And they would be able to then recenter or refocus or, you know, move out of the issue or the concern.
So you've described how there were those cultural gaps that you had to deal with when you started running a center. But what about this deeper gap between the beauty of the true self and the reality of the self with the vices that we have,
yeah,
after this long journey through time?
The thought that I had was that recognizing, you know, I'm a soul, everything is beautiful, this is who I am, this is my true nature, knowing that, experiencing that, and then looking clearly at what I had become. Okay, because yeah, it wasn't always happy, wasn't always, you know, calm, wasn't always
hunky-dory,
golden agent in that sense. And to be able to be aware of that and accept that. Okay, this is where I'm at. Mm. This is what has happened, and you know, and not to worry about it.
Mm.
I have that experience most mornings.
Mm.
It's amazing.
Mm.
Because I go to bed and, you know, brush my teeth, comb my hair, whatever it's going to be, flop down. And when I wake up, I look different. You know, the hair's there and this and that. And it's like, what happened? It's not a horrible situation, but sometimes the way we look in the mirror when we go to bed is different than the way we look in the mirror when we wake up. Okay? I don't know if you've had that experience or not. And it's like, well, you know, I don't know what happened. I don't remember any of the details. I don't really understand how I got into this situation. But I know that I have a choice. I can not look in the mirror and say everything's fine. I can look in the mirror and say, you know, that's not the way you're supposed to be. And I can look in the mirror and say, you know, maybe I should comb my hair. Maybe I should do something to bring it back to the way I was. And that illustrates to me that what our journey through the cycle is. Okay? If I know who I am, that's great. But if I look a little closer, I find that there is some, you know, vice, negativity, attachment, whatever it's going to be. And seeing myself, then that's the time for choosing. What am I going to do now that I recognize? Because I'm not going to try to watch video of myself to see when I turned my head when it got, you know, tangled up. I don't see that as a very fruitful process. And so looking at my history, why would I have had this sanskar? Where did this come from? Analyzing my past, I don't see as helpful. Okay? It might be for some people in some situations and whatever. But for me, it's like, okay, here I am. This is me. Let me look closely at the mirror and what needs to be fixed. And how can I start to have that vision and that experience and that truth and move through the circumstance I'm in and bring it back. Okay? And so combing my hair is something that I recommend to all of you, you know, if you don't do that. And also evaluating yourself on a spiritual level of what have you accumulated over the night of the copper and the iron age when we're not aware of what's going on. Now we're waking up, now we're seeing ourselves, now we have the truth, now we have the mirror that Baba gives us. And so when I can start to see myself and my true self and all my barnacles are clear.
Barnacles, you know that word? They're little things that stick onto the bottom of boats, aren't they?
Yeah, or whatever it is that adheres to us. Then I can start to take action to remove the things that keep me from how I am acting and how I see myself and how I want to be, and remove that so that I become what I know is true. And I think it's a wonderful way to go through the day, is not what am I dealing with now, what do I have to struggle with, what are my weaknesses, what do I have to focus on, but flip that around, that this is who I'm going to be. This is, you know, that's what Brahma Baba would do. You've heard stories. One of the stories you've heard is that they caught him dancing one time. Oh, you know, and why are you dancing? Because I'm going to be Narayan. And so he was living in what he was going to be, and he brought the future into the present rather than trying to work with the past in the present, if that makes any sense. And it's a fabulous way to move through any situation. This is who I am. I'm rightful. I have these qualities. This is the way I see myself, and let me step into my future self in the present.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think that's... I've arrived at an understanding of that. It's taken me probably longer than it did you, but it's a fabulous understanding. It entails... You use the word acceptance, you know, when you're looking in the mirror and, oh, you know, I need the comb kind of thing.
Oh, well.
And that's all it is. It's, but you need to look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Not sort of think that it's better not to look at it and shove...
I have made the mistake, to interrupt, of not looking in the mirror and kind of going out, I don't know, late for Amrit Vela, you know, it's like, and I get some funny looks, you know, because I must, you know, have whatever is going on. And so that's good feedback.
Yes.
So if people make funny looks at you as you go through your day, be observant. Maybe they're seeing something I'm not.
It's so, so powerful, this aspect of acceptance of myself as I am, knowing, and I'm only able to do that really when I've allowed Baba to inform me of who I am truly. But with that knowledge, when I've really got that feeling, this is who I, the truth about myself, then I can see the stuff that is not the truth and accept that that is the case.
Yeah.
Rather than the ego wants to shove it out of sight, or, you know, you push it down and then it affects your life in different ways that you can't understand where your sadness or your depression or negative feelings are coming from, or your reactivity to someone else because they're acting as a mirror for some weakness in you.
Yeah.
All of those things, all of those traps on the spiritual journey, I've found, and I've fallen into these traps, but acceptance is a brilliant word for a brilliant kind of key
yeah.
to moving beyond those traps. And once you start accepting yourself, you find that that's when you're able to look at others with really with good wishes and pure feelings, where previously, because of stuff that you haven't accepted in yourself, when you look out and you see it reflected in others, ooh, I don't like that, you know, there's reactivity. Whereas when you've accepted it in yourself, it may not be gone,
mm-hmm.
but you've accepted that that's something that was there, and you look at others, and you've much more chance of just seeing the beauty of the pure soul, and knowing that it's not that you're ignorant of the weaknesses that are out there, but you don't dwell on them. And amazingly, with this self-acceptance, it also becomes much more meaningful to do what Baba asks of us, where he said something recently about, I accept myself as I am originally and eternally. It was Laviat Murali, maybe about a month ago, and where Baba talked about three crowns, I think, and one of them was this crown it was a different Murali from one I'm thinking of, but I accept myself as I am originally and eternally, and that starts to you give yourself permission to accept that original self when you have also fully accepted the fact that the hair may, you know, got tousled during the night. It's a wonderful breakthrough, but it seems to me that, you know, it takes us different periods of time to get to that, and you cottoned on to that pretty early, I think.
Knowing something and mastering something are two different things,
mm-hmm.
also. You were talking and, you know, practicing something and revealing. I was in a conversation recently, and it was with Mohini Didi. She was talking about what she was doing, and it is trying to be a presence rather than getting into the problem, to try to help and solve by being the source,
like
vibration.
Like the sun, yes,
yeah.
Shedding light.
And just to be able to offer, you know, your thoughts on, you know, not the thinking type of thoughts, but to be able to share the energy, the vibration, the peace, Baba's qualities, so that the situation resolves in the way it's going to, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes, you know, it gets more complicated. The example that's coming up is coming to Madhuban. If I come as an individual, I've got my list of what I need. I can pack that and I get a ride to the airport. When there's a group of five, this one is going and this one is going to help and this one has to come, it's a whole jamela.
It's okay? What? A jamela. Mm.
It's you know, we need a couple different cars and how much is the luggage and who's going to drive and how are we going to drop off. And I mean, it just expands. And so the more people who have their thoughts or their actions into an activity seem to make the water, the issue, more muddled, harder to see.
So how do you deal with that? Because we do things together.
We do things together, but you don't have to try to process everything. And the intent is that it's already fixed. It's going to happen. And so how can I offer my thoughts and my vibrations into what that atmosphere is so that it is clear how everybody should move through the situation for a successful outcome.
I think what you're talking about there relates to this challenge that Avyek Baba gives us, where he says, and this was in a recent Murali, that he said, you have the crown of the constantly carefree king when you hand all your problems to Baba.
Okay.
And it's as if what you've just described is actually doing that.
Yeah.
Because the question arises, well, the problem is there, you know. What does it mean to hand it to Baba?
Yeah.
But it's actually this kind of sense that the drama is as it is. It's certainly no point in fighting it up to the second ago. It's happened. That's what is there. And then for the future, the confidence that it's going to evolve as it always has done. That seems to be related to this quality that you're describing in Sister Mohini.
Well, if we go back to the theme, I guess, was bestower. What is bestowing? And it means to have something and to give that. And so the more that we can take, the more that we have that, the more we can use the power of our mind, our thoughts, that is the quality that will help other souls to see what it is that they need to do. And so rather than getting into the situation, it's kind of probably how Baba helps us. I go to the center, Harmony House, and I have the opportunity to have a number of things come my way. And I don't always choose those. I rarely choose those. I can do other things. But I come in and it's, you know, hello, go to Baba's room. I'm here to help you, Baba. Okay? And that's kind of my mindset. These aren't my problems. These aren't my issues. But they've come to God's home. I'm here. Let me see what I can do. I will help. I'll do my best. Let's see what we can do.
You're available.
And that's always been the case. Trying to make myself available so that if there's something that I can do or move this forward, then let that happen. But not holding on to it and not saying it's mine helps me be light with the issue and allows a different quality to come in to help resolve that. I'm not in charge of the lights. I can talk in the dark. I don't have to do anything like that. But that helps a lot in that sense that we can be bestowers because we are taking from the bestower.
Yeah. You know, you're reminding me, again, I feel as if things have been falling into place like one after the other for me in this last, maybe about the last couple of years, after a long journey of battling with this and that and the other. But Baba said something recently. It was actually that same Murali where he talked about having the crown of being the constantly carefree king as long as you had everything over to Baba. He said you have the tilak of the awareness of being a soul who is God's creation, seated at the roots of the tree. What a beautiful thing. And you know, I actually feel that I am God's creation now. And I used to misunderstand this. I used to think, God's creation? That's, you know, what does it mean? I used to think of, perhaps thinking of the Christian idea, you know, that God created us all from nothing, kind of thing. But no, we're God's creation because of the study and the yoga that he teaches us to have. It's it's the change of consciousness. He doesn't create us out of nothing. There's such a key understanding in the concept of the cycle that he doesn't create us out of nothing. He takes our fallen consciousness and our body consciousness and changes it into a divine consciousness through the Murli, through his teachings, through the Srimat, and through yoga. So we're God's creation. That is a phenomenal point of self-respect, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
But
you are phenomenal. You are God's creation.
But I don't know among you if some of you kind of sometimes may struggle with self-respect. I remember, actually, when we, on our way here, we called in on Urvashi in the Sheshiben's office in Pandavabhavan. And she was asking after my family, Lockett family and everything, and I was saying everything's good. And she said something like, I remember Daddy Janki used to tell you to not to put yourself down, you know, but hold that self-respect in mind. And I thought, I'd forgotten this actually, but I think Daddy Janki would be very pleased to hear me saying that I'm God's creation, because that is a real breakthrough in self-respect to understand that. So allow that into your heart, those of you who maybe you've allowing the vices to form too much of a part of your sense of who you are. No, they're just something that is here today. It'll be gone tomorrow. We work through and we arrive at realizing the beauty of the true self.
Ta-da!
Shall we see if anyone would like to ask any questions about
sure.
this?
Sure. Yeah, there's a little time, there's some time, and we were offered the opportunity to see if there was anything that was sparked in your minds, whether it's a comment, an experience, a question. Would that be okay if Sister Chris has a microphone? Is there anything that you would like in the audience to share? You would have to somehow radiate a request by probably raising your hand, if that would be something. Or you can run down to the front.
Om Shanti. I was just wondering, as you, both of you have met Bab Dada personally, and you ended up with self-respect, could you share one of the blessings you got from Bab Dada personally that helped you in maintaining your self-respect?
Shall I begin?
Would you like to?
I can remember my first trip to Madhaban, and at the end of it, and I was very blissful during that trip, and at the end of it, Baba said, "You're a constantly carefree king, aren't you?" So the blessing was there, but it took some time to make it solid.
You understood that I came into Gyan individually. I had communication for a year and a half or so. But I didn't have any measuring stick. There was nobody around. And so I didn't know exactly if I was doing things right.
Mm-mm.
And so when I came to meet Baba in Om Shanti Baba the first time, I had questions, you know. Is this, you know, how am I doing? What's going on? And the drishti was there. incredible. And then Baba said, I give you 3 gold coins. One is that you are gold.
Sorry?
That you are gold.
You are gold.
Mm-hmm. 3 gold coins. The second is that you are rightful for the golden age. And third, you have the golden opportunity for service.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember those. And I take inspiration from that. And I feel that I met God because He knew what was in my mind without any kind of questioning.
Mm-hmm.
And so He gave me the answers that allowed me to say, okay, I'm doing all right. Let me continue what I'm doing. So far, God has been pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Om Shanti. Okay, so both of you have such a huge amount of experience of self-transformation and making effort, you know, and wherever you have reached now. So how do you see your future in terms of effort, self-transformation?
Great.
Make sense?
Yes, great question.
Okay.
Mm.
We're going to just observe traffic control to transform ourselves.
For myself, it's the fresh, in a sense, even after more than 40 years on this path, the fresh realization of the power of pure vibrations. That, and there's a lot more work to be done to become radiant, you know, with truth. I recognized it in yogis previously, but I didn't kind of anticipate that it would be possible to be like that myself while I was still struggling to get in place the basic understanding. I am a soul and I'm a child of God and I've been round the cycle. But now that that is clearer and I'm understanding the power of acceptance, the fact that there's no need to go into the past, that just to sort of continue the process of making Baba my companion, being detached from the role, becoming instrumental, shining in the way that Eric was describing, I can see now that that is actually the best way of serving the wider world. Because of being a student of this spiritual university outside of India, coming from that English background, Christian country, even though I've been rejecting of religion, there's quite a lot of the culture that is inside me. And so I've had this feeling that somehow this knowledge should be made relevant to my Lockick family, relatives and others. And when I began, they were amazed by the excitement I was experiencing, but they could see that there wasn't the deep transformation. But now that transformation is happening, I understand that the more that it is furthered inside and I really become the truth, that is the highest service rather than words to family. You know, that words don't mean things to people unless they happen to be a Brahmin, you know, and something will be triggered inside. But generally speaking, this desire to be serving the wider world, I understand now that it's the furthering of this process of beautification of the soul, so that it can really shine in the world and people can think, oh, this is beautiful. What lies behind this? I feel as if, or they may not even ask that question, but just be supported by those positive vibrations. I feel as if that is the way forward. And plenty more work to be done on that, but it's within sight now. And I, just associated with that, I see how when Bapdada especially says that every thought, every breath should be with Baba, every second should be with Baba. Previously, I actually said to Daddy Gulzar once, it's impossible, you know. I mean, I'm lucky if I have a couple of hours really with Baba, but then I'm swept up by the day. Daddy said, the reason Baba says that is that when you're not with Baba, you're with Maya. You know, you've got your old consciousness that is going to intrude. So I'm understanding that I really have to be attentive to my thoughts, my breath, more attention on that to build up that power inside so that that beauty can shine. That's my feeling right now.
Great. Answering, I guess, the same question, awareness of thoughts would be the distilled answer to that. What am I thinking? What is the thoughts on this situation or this, and to change it, align it to what I want it to be. Because there are things that happen and a thought will come, but that doesn't mean that I have to hold on to it or act on it or, you know, make a feeling out of it. And so if I am filled with something already, then a thought will come, but it doesn't have the power to bump out the feelings that I want. And so to be aware of what's happening, I believe, is going to allow me to become what I'm hopeful we all will be. And to illustrate that, I'm going to tell an example that we had a program in New York, and Dadi Prakashmani was invited, and it was held at a college, Fashion Institute actually. And so there was kind of a nice summer day, lots of kids kind of out, they were, you know, cutting edge type of individuals. But when Dadi came and got out of the car, these kind of, you know, youthful individuals, they knew something was happening. They knew that this person was different. And so they kind of rose to the occasion and got out of the way and opened the door. There was something about her. She didn't say anything. She was, you know, polite and acknowledged everyone. But there was something about Dadi as the soul that other souls were able to have some sort of a recognition. And in the program, she did something quite amazing. It was journalists, you know, professionals, adults. And when she was invited to come on stage, she came on stage and she stood there. And she just acknowledged everybody. And she transformed the room. Everybody knew something was happening. They didn't know what it was. But everybody was able to have this sense that they were in the presence of something special and unique. And this morning in Shanti Van Merle, I was sitting, and there was a brother who went by, and you know, he had some cologne on. And he left a mark. I mean, not quite the same as the mark Dadi would have left with those souls. But that sense that, can I watch my thoughts so much that I'm only having elevated, pure, envisioned, and that is the basis of bestowing, so that whatever I do, wherever I go, there's going to be something different that is going to arrest people's attention and direct it in God's direction. And so watching the thoughts, what is happening? And just going through the day with the routine, but being kind of vigilant and not lazy, and not to encourage and hold the thoughts that I know that are not beneficial for myself or a relationship. And I'm hopeful that we all practice that, because that's what Baba, I think, is saying to us. Watch your thoughts. Have your face. Be happy. Be content. Practice that. Become that. And we will become that. It's pretty exciting. You are going to be great.
Yeah. We saw Daddy Janki making that kind of effort. I knew her long enough to know that she wasn't, when I first met her, she wasn't completely free. She was already very great, but she still had desires, and you could say they were pure desires, but she would become frustrated by things, by our lack of progress. And as time went on, we just saw how she paid so much attention to every thought, every breath. She was really doing that. And a point came where it was like getting the three bells on a fruit machine. You know, when you get the jackpot. Daddy reached a point like that where it may have been about 10 years before she left the body. And there was so much alignment with Baba. She was always aligned with Baba. But there was so much alignment with Baba that it was as if there was a cascade of good feelings and good wishes for us and the world. And that is a wonderful goal to aim for all of us. And again, acknowledging that it's a journey, accepting where we are, accepting that we're where we are because of our journey through time, and Baba doesn't attribute any blame for that. But then knowing that this beautiful goal of being really truly detached but loving is so worthwhile for everyone that we feel responsible for. I've had a long journey to let go of attachment in personal relationships. Long journey where I felt as if, you know, I was responsible for other people. But we're not ultimately. We may have good relationships, close relationships, but it's Baba who's responsible, and my best service to others is to become as much Baba's as I can, because then I can be a vehicle for Baba to support those that I'm in contact with.
I think this is a sign. And now there's another sign. And if I'm seeing a clock, that's another sign. Mm-hmm. And so, Sister Chris, welcome back.
That's another sign. Yes, our time together has come to a pause, at least. And so thank you very much for your sharings with us, brothers. And yeah, it's been really lovely, and I especially liked your three gold coins, Eric, and your carefree emperor crown, Brother Neville. Mm-hmm. So now we'll just see you like that, no? Because Baba creates such a stamp in our